Right, I thought I'd talk about loving kindness this evening, which is a major element of the Buddha's teaching. If all else fails, RTFM. That's what they say, isn't it? Whenever I get a new piece of software or some new gadget of some kind, the tendency is to, I don't know if you're like this, but the tendency is to just start playing with it, see if I can get it to work. And you spend quite a lot of time dabbling with it, and then it's not really doing what you wanted to do, and you start getting frustrated with it. And you remember what your dad told you when you was young. If all else fails, RTFM. Read the flipping manual. We find ourselves on this planet Earth, and although we are told how to behave and what to do and how to live life, we're socialised into a way of behaving, yet nonetheless, as we go on, we find ourselves subject to states such as depression and loneliness, and there are all kinds of issues around relationships and around how we relate to one another, and self-confidence. All these kinds of issues arise. There can also be frustrations and irritations of all kinds. We can suffer from impatience. And all in all, it can be very trying business being a human being on planet Earth. And I think the words my father said sort of apply, you know. If all else fails, read the flipping manual. And I think we find ourselves here today because the Buddha's teaching is a manual. It is a way of understanding how life works in a very complete way. It does explain what you need to do in order to be happy and free of suffering. And the Buddha said that the mind was the forerunner of all things. Whether it's the London Olympics, or whether it's St. Paul's Cathedral, whether it's buying a new car, whatever it might be, everything that we get up to originates as an idea in the mind. And the mind is a tool. It's something that we can train. And a lot of the problems that we face in life are due to not understanding how the tool of mind actually works. And so there's very great emphasis in the Buddha's teaching on understanding, learning the mechanics of mind and body, actually understanding how thoughts work and how they influence our lives and bring happiness or suffering in their wake, depending on how we use it. So essentially the idea I'm pointing to is that most people, we all have this tool of mind, this ability to think, but many of us don't actually know that we can actually become very skillful in how we use thinking. Thinking is a tool. And one of the tools, one of the ways we can develop skillful thinking is through the development of what we call metta, the meditation on friendliness, loving kindness meditation. And through the development of metta, we can actually overcome a lot of self-concern, the self-concern and the resistance that does breed these unfortunate states like depression and impatience and so forth. It's not just about sitting down on a chair, closing your eyes, and developing a meditation on loving kindness. All aspects of walking the path actually develop the capacity for friendliness. Think, for example, the Buddha's teaching on keeping the precepts, the five Buddhist precepts. All five are the restraints of action, but they are an action nonetheless, and they are actions of friendliness, the restraint of from killing or harming living creatures. You don't get much more friendly than that, do you? Refraining from stealing is a very friendly act. It's a restraint of greed, isn't it? I want that, but it's somebody else's, so I'm not going to take it. Therefore, one restrains from that activity. That is developing quality of friendliness towards our fellow beings, and of course ourselves. And living a good ethical life is essential if we're going to practice meditation. I think there was another spiritual teacher a long time ago made the point that you can't build a house on sand. And we do have to have, to meditate successfully, we do have to have good strong foundation in our ethical behaviour. When it comes to meditation of all kinds, of any kind, there must be a willingness to acknowledge inefficient states of mind. Coming to a teaching like this, perhaps recognising that we're not skilled in mind, is a great blessing, because it lets you off the hook of feeling that you're supposed to get it right all the time, and that somehow that the irritation, the frustrations, the ill will that you feel from time to time somehow shouldn't be there. Of course it's there. You haven't yet learned skill in mental control. These things are bound to arise. It's very important to acknowledge both positive and negative states. It makes it a lot easier to meditate when you do, because you're not fighting the mind. So again, as a necessary precursor to practicing metta as a meditation, there has to be the acknowledgement and the kindness to oneself of recognising that there are skills that can be developed, but it is inevitable that there are going to be these habitual tendencies like ill will that will be running. And following on from that, to practice loving kindness, there also needs to be a great deal of patience. It doesn't come all at once. New patterns of behaviour always take time to develop, and one thing that meditation of all kinds does develop is patience. It's a lot of mistake making and a lot of learning that has to go on, but if you're devoted, if you persist and persevere, those skills can be learned. It's like anything, it's like playing a computer game. If you keep on playing the game again and again and again, you get more efficient at it, you get better at it. This is no different. One thing I think that can help tremendously with developing a loving attitude to life is to treat all objects with a certain amount of reverence. To practice mindfulness in regard to everything, even the cutlery drawer. Even the way you put plates back in the cupboard. Anything that you choose to treat with a certain amount of reverence is developing a friendliness to life itself, which is, in a sense, what the Buddha's teaching is all about. It also helps, if we're going to develop the mind, to understand about the law of action and result, what we call the law of karma. Recognising, accepting that our actions do have results. This is tremendously beneficial, especially when it comes to practising metta. I'll briefly go into the method of practising metta. There are a lot of different books on the subject, and of course there's always the possibility for asking a teacher for more detailed instructions, especially if you're practicing it yourself and you come up against obstacles or hurdles. It'd be tremendously helpful. But I think it's good to go through how to set it up and how to do it. The first thing, most important thing to do if you're going to sit and practice metta, is to clear the mind. Any meditation, you have to first spend time allowing what we call the hindrances to meditation to drop away. The worries, the anxieties, the daydreams, so on and so forth. One of the obstacles to metta and getting a loving feeling going is a sense of resentment. Perhaps someone did something at work you didn't like, or you've got an ongoing dispute with someone. And part of this process of clearing the mind is balancing the mind off. Some of the ways we can do that, of letting go of resentments and frustrations in life, is to recognise the law of karma, to recognise that to continue with a resentful state of mind is only adding to the problem. What do they call it? It's like throwing fine dust into an oncoming breeze. If you continue with the resentment, it's just going to come back all over you. Thinking like that can help balance the mind and remind us that maintaining a resentment towards people is not beneficial and not helpful. The Buddha maintained that there are seven things that gratify an enemy. May he be ugly. May he be in pain. May he experience no luck, have no wealth, no fame, no friends, and may he have a bad rebirth. Unfortunately, those are all the things that we can expect as results of our actions if we continue with resentment. So it seems like madness to do what our enemy would wish for us. It's very helpful before practicing metta just to reflect on the drawbacks of a resentful or hateful attitude towards others. As I've just stated, I'm sure you've seen it yourself, when somebody is in a hateful mood or an angry mood, they're not attractive. And there is an immediate result, painful result for somebody who does do anger. And I'm sure we all know in our own lives how it feels to be angry, and how, in hindsight, how silly we feel as a consequence. So, taking time just to reflect on the drawbacks can be very beneficial. And then to consider the benefits of practicing loving kindness meditation. The benefits are incredible. It's an extremely powerful meditation, an extremely powerful reflection when you get it going. So, things like if you have trouble sleeping, metta, loving kindness meditation. Is said to. Do you want to give a good old cough and go? Sorry, I'll edit it off the CD. Okay. So, yes, one of the benefits is that you sleep well, and that you have pleasant dreams, and that you wake up refreshed. A friend of ours, a meditator here who now lives in Australia, was having trouble with his very young daughters, and what he decided to do, on remembering that metta had this beneficial result, he would do a loving kindness practice with his two little children before they went to sleep. And it was incredibly, apparently he said it was incredibly effective. So he would get them to think about their friends at school and what they liked about them, and to wish them well, and apparently it'd send them off to sleep. It's a bit like saying your prayers at bedtime. It just creates a very beautiful state of mind to go to sleep with. As a consequence, you wake up and you're a lot happier. Another benefit is that you're said to be dear to both humans and non-humans. It's an aspect of the benefits of metta that I'd like to come on to later if I have time, that we very much reflect our states of mind. How we choose to behave mentally will be reflected externally. And if you wanted a prime example of this, the Dalai Lama was in the country this week to accept an award, and I saw some photographs of him, and every time I've seen photographs of him, it's always the same. Don't look at the Dalai Lama, look at the people around him. They are always smiling, always. I think the only people that I haven't seen smiling are his monks. I don't know why that is. Nothing to do with me. But you look, 9 times out of 10, you'll find that everyone around the Dalai Lama is smiling. Now ask yourself why. So the benefits are enormous. Not only the immediate benefits of having a beautiful state of mind, it aids our concentration, which again helps our insight meditation. You're less likely to come across violent or dangerous situations. And even if you don't make it to enlightenment in this life, you die unconfused, and you can look forward to an extremely beneficial rebirth. It really is an extraordinarily powerful but very simple practice. So how do you do it? There are many different ways of doing it. You can do it by volume, so starting with oneself and then expanding to the room and to the streets and to the town and to the country. You can do it by direction, people in the north, people in the south, the east, the west, and so forth. Which are very good ways of doing it, but they're not as powerful. If you think doing metta to Western Europe is not actually as powerful as doing it to one person. Doing it to one person is an extremely powerful way of doing it. We always begin with ourselves, because you can't give metta until you know what it is. And you can't give something that isn't in your possession. So we start with ourselves, and then we choose various people, a respected person, a friend, a neutral person, and somebody, well, we call it enemy, but it's somebody with whom we're having difficulties at the moment. And in each case, the idea is to think of their good qualities and then to wish them well. And what most people do is focus on the wishing them well, but seem to miss out the looking at the good qualities. But the looking at the good qualities is extremely powerful, because it creates a mental connection with that being in your head. So starting with ourselves, obviously we just look at the good things that we do in life, the things that we're skillful at, the good turns that we've made. Coming here is an extremely wholesome and noble thing to do. Following the Buddha's teaching, practicing meditation, restraining our excesses, not just for our benefit, but for the benefit of everybody, is a very noble and worthwhile thing to do, and it's something that we can reflect on. And then we wish ourselves well. May I be well and happy. May I be at peace, free from struggle and torment. May my heart's desires be fulfilled. Some people have difficulty doing it to themselves, but we're a person too. We're no different from other people. And one of the things you get from practicing metta is a recognition of how similar we all really are. The next person you do it to is a respected person, which is, now they must have your respect for a reason. And it's just bringing to mind why you respect them. And so moving from yourself to a respected person is quite a seamless movement. So you're starting with somebody with whom you find it quite easy, very easy, to see their good points. Next, move on to a friend. Again, they must be a friend for a reason. And as they're quite well known to you, you must be able to, with some ease, be able to think of some of their good qualities, the good things that they've done in their life. It may or may not be revolving around spiritual matters, but that's okay. Maybe they've done extremely well in their career. The next person you do it towards is a neutral person. Now, this is somebody that is, whose personal history is not really known to you. So it might be somebody on TV, it could be the news agent, but it's somebody with whom you don't really have a personal relationship. The idea being that it's more challenging then to think of their good qualities. But they must have good qualities, otherwise they wouldn't be on planet Earth, they'd be in hell. So everyone who comes to planet Earth has good qualities. They're a mixture of dark and bright states. So they must have deserved it, they must deserve to be here. So, but you do have to think a little bit. Maybe it's a news agent, boy, he probably has to get up at 4:30 in the morning. Acts of renunciation for the benefit of news readers around the country. Or something. And the last person you do it to is somebody with whom you're having difficulties. Now, of course, we've come a long way here. The reason you're upset with them, there may be very good reasons that you're upset with them. The purpose of the metta towards the person with whom you have difficulties is to help to balance off the mind. So at the very least, we get an equanimous feeling about the person. It is wholly biased towards the positive. So it's looking at the many sterling and good qualities that the person with whom you have difficulty has. And you can find them. Everyone has good qualities. Even the most heinous despot only got to that position because of skills that he had. And all the way along, it's thinking about the good qualities that person has and wishing them well. Now, to begin with, it might be difficult to get it going. People do find that there's a resistance. That resistance is partly just not having the skill, so you have to be very persistent and determined. There might also be a view structure which might make it more difficult to allow you to express loving feelings in your mind towards others. But it's like anything, the more you do it, the more you intend, eventually you break through. And you find that practicing in this way produces quite a delightful state of mind. It really is quite delightful. It's a sense of that all is well with the world. It's a sense of that the world is on your side. It's a concentration meditation, there's a sense of tranquility and quietude. At those times, you're not resisting the world, you're not resisting life. In a sense, it's quite a magical effect. The kamma is the actions that you perform, the mental actions that you're performing again and again, and the results are these beautiful states of mind. And it really does become really quite powerful when you begin to consider how it changes your perception of the world. And you begin to realise how malleable and how fluid perception is. Perception being the way we label things, the label that we give to things. And you begin to see that, depending on how you think, your subjective experience of the world changes dramatically. So instead of seeing potential danger at every corner, you start to see people in a good light. I might have used this example before, I probably have, running out now, of when I was a monk, of being walking down a street, I think it's Christmas time, and this group of lads, 18, 19, all in a line, and there's me. And the kind of way they were walking was suggesting that I should go into the road. And I was feeling a bit of a bullshy mood. I wasn't a very good monk, and I held my ground. And I got a fair bit of abuse as a consequence as they were walking past. And another time, not long after, similar situation, it was actually walking up Mason's Lane here, and a group of boys coming down the hill, and I just sort of stepped out of their way, and they all said, "Oh, thank you very much." So, depending on the way you behave mentally, because it all begins mentally, you get different results. And this sense of loving feeling that emerges, it's not enlightenment, but it has the same quality in the sense that all love is the absence of division and separation. And although it's very much mundane, you're not at odds with the world, you're not creating divisions, you're far more accepting of life as it is, far more able to adapt and flow with the demands of life. And so it makes a quite wonderful support for living if it's practiced on a regular basis. And it does have a taste of enlightenment about it. You do get a sense of the wholeness of being absolutely a part of everything there is, which is the hallmark of enlightenment, the realization of the way life really is. So you find that a mind imbued with metta is less likely to believe that life should be different than it is. And the whole problem of depression and frustration and irritation and all these inefficient states is that at that time we always believe that life should be different than it is. Blimey, I'm actually early. Unlike me. Oh yes, there was one further aspect to do with bringing one's awareness and one's attention. It goes back really to that idea about developing friendliness towards all objects. As I'm sure you understand here that there's a culture of impeccability where we try to look after everything carefully. We still have, for instance, spoons in the kitchen, which I noticed one particular stirring spoon was made in West Germany. And when did the wall come down? That's got to be 30 years ago, isn't it, or something? So we've had the same serving spoon because we look after stuff, so stuff doesn't, you know. The idea being that love is this absence of division, of opposition. So if you give your full attention to something, complete attention to something, that's love. So if it is something, you're just doing something in the kitchen or doing a bit of gardening, mowing the lawn or something, but you're giving perfect attention to what you're doing out of a sense of friendliness towards it, out of a sense of impeccability towards it, then that is love. And you'll find that at those times there's absolutely no self-concern around at all. Before finding the Buddha's teaching, when I was in India, I experimented with doing some healing art. Not art to heal me, but I mean actual sort of hands-on healing stuff when I was in India. And there too, the emphasis was on total attention, without any bias, without any expectation, without any wanting personally anything from the experience. It was all about creating, an atmosphere in which the person could almost self-heal, allow that healing process, that they felt safe, that they felt that they could let stuff out, that stuff could happen, and energy could start moving where it was being suppressed or blocked off. What is that total attention if it's not love? So, to sum up, practicing metta is really good for you.